This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. He was the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. He was the divinely appointed trustee. He was the divinely appointed rightful successor, and he was the divinely appointed Khalifatullah for the Muslims. We find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the only representative at the forefront of the opposition to the rule of the corrupt Abbasid caliphs. He was one of the prominent leaders of the Muslim Ummah who struggled against tyranny and oppression. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam took a brave and unwavering position against the tyrannical kings of his age. He did not associate with any of them. Rather, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam preferred to stay away from these tyrannical kings. And therefore, these kings held grudges and an enmity against Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and they inflicted him with severity and violence, ultimately leading to the martyrdom of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jamaatul Kabira issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Of course, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the 10th rightful successor to the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, and he was divinely appointed as the 10th Imam alayhi salam. There's a very interesting dialogue between Imam Ali alayhi salam and a Jewish person who came to see him. Now, Imam Hadi alayhi salam is the one who is relating this story. And one of the things that comes about when we hear stories related by the infallible Imams alayhi salam, it shows us the depth of their divine knowledge. So after the passing of 9 generations, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam is talking about a story which dates back to 9 generations or so before him. So again, this attests to their divine knowledge. So the story that Imam Hadi alayhi salam relates is as follows, that once a Jewish man came to Imam Ali alayhi salam and said to him, "Tell me about that which is not of Allah, and that which Allah does not have, and that which Allah does not know." Now, of course, it's interesting, many people and many scholars came to Imam Ali alayhi salam and put forth these kind of very complex religious, theological, and philosophical puzzles. In response, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "What Allah does not know is that he does not accept that he has a child. This refutes what you Jews say about Uzair being the son of Allah. As for that which is not of Allah, it is injustice, because there is no injustice with Allah against his own people. And as for your saying about that which Allah does not have, it is that Allah has no partner." Now, this was really a very complex theological, philosophical puzzle that this Jewish scholar had put forth to Imam Ali alayhi salam. And when he heard these answers from the Imam, he became a Muslim, he declared the Shahada, and he said to Imam Ali alayhi salam, "That I bear witness that you are the truth, you are from the people of truth, and you have said the truth." This is this beautiful conversation that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam relates to us. And again, it shows us not only that these divinely appointed Imams are connected to this divine knowledge and this divine truth, but also that they have this knowledge that has been given to them by the Almighty Allah. And of course, as it is said in the Holy Quran, if you do not know, go towards those who do know. Go towards those who are the masters, and thus we have been guided to go towards the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, as well as the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and the Immaculate Imams. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
An Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli heritage minister, Eliyahu, made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli Heritage Minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abul Qaid has said the remarks revealed that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians. Since Israel's war began on Gaza on October the 7th, the Israeli military has dropped more than 25,000 tons of explosives on Gaza, equivalent in power to two of the nuclear bombs used on Hiroshima. EuroMed Human Rights Monitor has said Israel has admitted to bombing over 12,000 targets in the Gaza Strip, with a record tally of bombs exceeding 10 kilograms of explosives per individual. Israel's use of internationally banned weapons in its attacks on the Gaza Strip has also been documented, especially the use of cluster and phosphorus bombs. The Israeli regime is estimated to possess 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the sole possessor of non-conventional arms in the Middle East and the wider West Asia region. Tel Aviv, however, neither admits nor denies owning the weapons under a policy of deliberate nuclear ambiguity. It has also defied international calls for it to sign the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the NPT, something that further corroborates its running of an offensive nuclear weapons program. The United Nations General Assembly has already backed a resolution urging the regime to give up its nuclear weapons and join the NPT.
Gaza Strip skyline. Israel's bombing campaign continues. An apocalyptic scene. It appears Israel is using the banned white phosphorus bombs again. Bombs which burns the skin down to the bone. The death toll continues to mount, like at the Al-Maghazi camp. 51 Palestinians murdered. Another massacre on top of the others. Genocide on speed. The cries over the loss of a beloved one, which is why people are angry worldwide. But the biggest rally for Palestinians ever to have taken place in Washington, D.C. The war is coming at a cost for Israel. Diplomatically, Bolivia cut off relations with Israel, with Turkey, Colombia, Chad, and Honduras recalling their ambassadors. Persian Gulf Arab leaders meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State. They all called for a ceasefire, but Blinken did not blink. No to a ceasefire, and on a humanitarian pause, a big maybe.
It's our view that ceasefire now would simply leave Hamas in place.
Yet Blinken had only echoed Netanyahu's statements on a ceasefire.
Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas.
David Petraeus, the retired general of the U.S. Army, responsible in part for his failure in Afghanistan and also in Iraq, in a leaked audio file, encouraged and approved Israel's carnage in Gaza.
I see no alternative to the destruction of Hamas, and I use that term specifically because, as Aviv knows, there's a military doctrinal term. It's a gradation. You know, you can disrupt, you can deny, you can defeat, you can destroy.
But he must not have been prepared for what an Israeli minister said when asked whether an atomic bomb should be dropped on the Gaza Strip. Amihai Eliyahu said this is one of the possibilities. Let's not forget, the Gaza Strip has already been hit by an atomic bomb. But not at once. Slowly, 25,000 tons dropped on the Strip so far. The resistance fighters slammed these comments as reflective of the evil and terrorist nature of the regime, while they fought street battles against the Israeli regime forces. Israel has suffered casualties as a result. The tide may be turning, with costs mounting for the U.S. and Israel. For Israel, the worldwide anti-Israel protests have shattered its image. These protests have also worked against the U.S.
It's definitely ceasefire. People are getting killed every minute.
In the U.S., there are worries about the aftermath of the war. It's time for Israel's friends to recognize that the current operational approach is causing an unacceptable level of civilian harm and does not appear likely to achieve the goal of permanently ending the threat from Hamas, is what this high-ranking senator said. In other words, the U.S. is at the phase of the war where people are starting to worry about how they will look when this is over. And they are worried about votes also, as cynical as that sounds. Muslim and Arab American groups have threatened to not vote for Biden in 2024. This includes Democratic Party leaders from contested states that can decide elections, such as Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. That, combined with the sanctioning of Israeli products, which has also gained traction, especially amongst the Generation Zs in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., but around the world.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrowshahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. You are welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works, the religious and scholar life of the most outstanding Muslim ladies, personalities, and dignitaries of Shiite world and Islamic world. I am Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai are the two special guest speakers for today's discussion from the Islamic Hawza of Qom. Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum, brother.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about another outstanding lady of Islam, of the Shiite world, Umm Farve, the wife of Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam and the mother of Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Sheikh Rouhani, give us some details about the early life and background of Umm Farve.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, Fatima or Qariba, the other title or name of this lady is also Qariba. She was mother of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, about whom Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam said that my mother, Umm Farwa, was a very true believer, mu'min, and righteous lady. And also Imam al-Sadiq praised and appreciated her a lot in the riwayat.
Yes.
And she was, of course, the wife of Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, and also mother of Imam al-Sadiq. She was called Umm Farwa or Umm Qasim as well. And she was among the rawat or the narrators of the ahadith of Ahlul Bayt as well, this great lady.
Yes.
Salamullahi alayha. And of course, A'imma alayhim salatu wasalam, from A'imma alayhim salatu wasalam, riwayat or ahadith are narrated about her virtues and fada'il. Mother of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam was the daughter of Qasim. Qasim was the father of this lady, was among the companions of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salatu wassalam. He was known as the jurist or faqih ahl Hijaz, among the jurists of Hijaz. The father of this lady was. And of course, Umm Farwa, daughter of this man, was also a very great lady. She was buried in Baqi Cemetery. And the mother of this lady was Asma.
Yes.
She was also another great lady in the history.
That's all right. Okay, Umm Farwa, again, the role of the mother in nurturing the children. And the time era of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam was really a critical, we can say, period of time for the Shiite world. It is believed that most of the authentic ahadith of the Shiites, isn't it, were narrated from that time. Also, the customs and the conducts were established on that time, Shaykh Fadai. So, was also Umm Farwa a ravi of hadith, a narrator of ahadith or not?
Yes, Umm Farwa was one of the narrators of ahadith from her husband and from some other imams. And here we can see that at that time, the position of people was known by their relationship with imams. Mm-hmm. I mean, the position of Shiite people.
Okay.
As we have a hadith, اَعْلَمُ مَنَازِلَ شِيَعَتَنَا عَلَى قَدْرِ رِوَايَتَنَا عَنَّا. If you want to know the position of our Shiites, check how much riwayah and hadith they narrate from us. And of course, just narrating is not enough. Narrating and understanding.
Yes.
And acting toward that.
And sorry, Sheikh, where to recognize the authenticity of this riwayat? Does it have any method?
You know, there are three sciences about hadith. One of them is Rijal al-Hadith. Okay. Rijal, check the people who narrated hadith about their biography, about their beliefs, about their relationship with Imam, whether they were honest or they were liar. And we have another science, Diraya. Diraya, check and investigate the chain of that narrator. This is another kind of checking and investigating whether this chain can be authentic or not. Is it possible that these people narrate from each other or not? Whether it connects to Imam or not? And the other one is Fiqh al-Hadith. Fiqh al-Hadith investigates the text of Rivaya, not the sanad documentation, just the text. Whether this text is real or not, whether in accordance with Quran or other Rivayats or not. Mm-hmm. So we have three filters as three sciences about Hadith. But anyway, the point is that narrating from Imams used to make a position for Shia, as we have for Umm Farwa in the science of Rijal, and she is known as one of the authentic narrators of Rivaya.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La
ilaha illallah. Okay, Sheikh, regarding what Sheikh said regarding the authenticity of the Ahadith and also Umm Farwa, because from one side she was belonging to Qasim ibn Muhammad ibn Abi Bakr. So it is believed that there is a hadith by Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam,
Walladani Abu Bakr.
Yes, validating Abu Bakr, you know, and belong. He says that I am from the lineage of Abu Bakr. Is this hadith authentic or not?
No, first of all, we should know that in the authentic narrative sources or hadith sources of the Shayu, we never have such a hadith. Mm-hmm. It is the first point.
Okay.
Only in Kashf al-Ghumma, which belonged to Erbali, he narrated a riwayah, but it is mursal. It means that there's no chain of transmission for mm-hmm. this riwayah. Mm-hmm. Because Hafiz ibn Abdul Aziz, who narrates for Imam Sadiq this riwayah, Hafiz ibn Abdul Aziz lived in the 7th century, mm-hmm. while Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam was living in the 2nd century. So here Hafiz ibn Abdul Aziz directly narrate from Imam who lived 4 or 5 centuries before this man.
Oh.
So, of course, this is completely unacceptable.
So, in the Elm of Rijal...
Yeah,
and
it is called
Raya?
Mursal. Mursal, yes.
Okay.
Because it has no chain of transmission. So, mm-hmm. first of all, in the authentic Shiite sources, we do not have such a hadith. On Kashf al-Ghumma, we have this hadith, but it is from Hafiz ibn Abdul Aziz, who lived in the 7th century. He directly narrates this riwayah from Imam Sadiq,
yes.
who lived in the 2nd century. So, of course, this kind of riwayat, without any chain of transmission, cannot be accepted. It is about the Shia sources.
That's right.
In the Sunni sources, again, Zahabi narrated this riwayah, but without any documentary, without any chain of transmission. Again, right. that is Mursal, we can say. Mm-hmm. And then in some other Sunni sources like Tahdhibul Kamal, it is narrated by Hafs ibn Ghiyas.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that in the chain of transmission, in the sanad of this riwayah, there are lots of doubts. And this riwayah of this Hafs ibn Ghiyas is not accepted by the Sunni scholars based on own rulings about ahadith. And also Ibn Asakir narrated this riwayah from a person called Ismail. So this Ismail, of course, first of all, we should know that he was so much old at that time that he himself said that my memory is not working properly and whatever I'm saying might not be true. And also in the documents of these hadith of Ibn Asakir, there's a person called Mu'adh ibn Muthanna.
Mm-hmm.
Ahmad ibn Hanbal said that this Mu'adh ibn Muthanna is not adil, is not
That's
just.
Right.
His riwayah is not accepted. You see that even in the Sunni sources, this riwayah is not accepted. It's very, you can say, weak in terms of the chain of the narration or transmitters. That's why, this hadith, وَلَّدَنِي أَبُو بَكْ مَرَّتَيْن, cannot be attributed to the Imam correctly based on the authentic sources of Shia and Sunni.
That's all right. Okay, Sheikh Fadai, your final remarks regarding Umm Farwa.
Yes, there is a riwayah from Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Kanat ummi mimman amanat wa taqat wa ahsanat. Allahu yuhibbul muhsinin." My mother was among the people who believed first amanat. So the characteristics of Umm Farwa.
Mm-hmm.
First, she was a believer. Wa taqat. Taqwa. She had the position of taqwa. It means she feared God. It's a spiritual position for the best servant of God. Then, wa ahsanat.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is that ahsanat? It means she was pure, she was clean, she was not corrupted. When we check the verses of Quran, for example, in the Surah Tahrim, verse 12, we recite there, وَمَرْيَمْ أَبْنَةَ عِمْرَانَ أَلَّتِي أَحْسَنَتْ فَارْجَهَا, like the word we have here, the term أَحْسَنَتْ, فَنَفَقْنَا فِيهِ مَنْ رُوحَنَا. When God wants to describe Maryam,
yes.
as the one of the best servants, he says, Mary, who was clean, was not corrupted, was pure and clean. فَنَفَخْنَا فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحَنَا. Then, because she was pure and clean, we gave her Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Very good. People, so purity is the necessity condition for the mother of an imam.
For the mother of an imam.
Okay.
We can say purity from sexual corruption is the base for iman.
Oh.
You know, if we do not stop ourselves, our souls, to go toward this corruption, we cannot claim that we are mu'min and Muslim. Here in this riwayah, amanat, wattaqat, wa ahsanat.
Mm-hmm.
So the real mu'min is the one who abstains himself from being corrupted by sexual desires.
Yes.
So with that corruption, we never can be a real mu'min.
Yes.
So this is the characteristics of the best servants of God. Being muhsin means, with sa'd in Arabic, means pure and clean.
As you said, the role of the mother, you know, and the motherhood is really important in parenting a child because, as you said, the pregnancy of the mother of an imam had also direct effect in the infallibility of the imam.
And only pure mothers can give birth to pure children.
And nowadays there are so many lessons for the mothers. You know, we know that there are some etiquettes for the pregnancy of women. For example, always being in the condition of wudu, reciting the Holy Quran, especially the mothers when they're pregnant. For the child, from the first months of the pregnancy of the women, there are strict and absolute recommendations for women of Islam, what to do and what not to do,
you know,
because they have direct roles.
That's sometimes we wrongly believe that if a woman is corrupted, she just harms herself. No, it's not like that.
That's
she harms herself and her generation.
That's
generation,
right.
Not just one son and one daughter.
That's right.
Just pure mother
can
give birth to pure children generation. That is the point. We can take it from that riwayah.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani. Umm Farwa is buried in Baqi Cemetery. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding lady, the mother of Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, wife of Imam Al-Baghir alayhi salam, one of the greatest also women of Islam and the narrator of authentic ahadith. It is very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program. The teacher, for more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. In another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
A teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of him?
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim, and thy name we start today's episode. So, Dear listeners, welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. I am Asma, at your service as the host. I have the pleasure to be here with two very dear guests, and welcome to the studio, brothers. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much for having us.
Wa alaikum assalam. Yep, happy to be here.
Thank you very much. So, it's the ritual, and we're not going to break the ritual, so please introduce yourself very much briefly.
I'm Ali, and I'm a student in the holy city of Qom.
And I'm Sayyid Mustafa. I'm also a student here. I'm also studying psychology along with Islamic studies.
I wish you both luck, and thank you for being here. Well, nowadays, everywhere, we are seeing too much of war, too much of brutality, and too much of excruciating photos, pictures, and emotions all around the world. So people, when they see such brutal images, they cannot stay silent. All of them would react to it in different ways. Though there is propaganda and there's this deception that does not let you see the truth as it is. So I'm just saying that there are millions hand in there, but then there is a truth. So in today's episode, we are coming back to reality and see the truth as it is. And let's say throughout the history, there's always been people who thought themselves to be the best nation, the best group of people. God has just picked them out of the crowd and stickered them like this, the best nation from all around the world. So we want to say, is there any such concept as the better nation?
Well, of course, in reality, there isn't such a thing. I would say that we're all human beings, right? Mm-hmm. And we all are born with different qualities. But unfortunately, you're right. Throughout history, it doesn't even have to be. It could be even on a political basis, for example. Yeah. Atheists, for example, today think they're the best people in the world, exactly. For example, right? It could be anything. Some people attach themselves to certain sports and start thinking they're the best in that, mm-hmm. for example, field.
Yeah.
It's a natural tendency for a human being to become arrogant or feel better about themselves over others, I think. And that plays out to a very, very extreme level, unfortunately, which we're going to be discussing today, I believe.
Exactly. So are you, Brother Adi?
Yeah, I guess being better people is, we can actually coin it as, the better the person is in his deeds and all, the better the person is.
Yeah, not that's anyone, in the eyes of God.
Yeah, in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Not just, you be good in a particular field and you just put yourself over
or
others.
Or based on your color or race or anything, whatever. It's not based on that, but unfortunately the reality tells us something else.
It's your deeds and it's your qualities that decide if you're a good person or not.
Exactly. Right. So what we see right now is totally different. If you have money, if you have too much of power over other people, you can call yourself the best people around the world. And then you can take people for yourself as your servants, as the lower people, as the people who are there for you to be taken. And if they die, nobody cares. Nobody even would blink an eye for them. And nobody will feel sorry for them because they are called the lower people. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the very core of today's discussion, which is Zionism. And let's talk about that. And if you share a bit of history, I would be too grateful.
Sure. So we're talking about Zionism, and Zionism is, why are we bringing it up, by the way, in the middle of the discussion about people feeling better? Is because Zionism, I think, sort of defines the idea of a nation thinking that they're better than others.
Exactly.
Right?
There's a common term that they use, like, we are the chosen people of God.
Chosen ones.
Chosen people of God. Unfortunately, the chosenness plays out in extreme brutality and suffering for the rest of humanity, right? But the core idea behind Zionism, by the way, is the idea that the Jewish people should have a homeland, right? The history behind it is that they were being kicked out of countries in Europe back in the early 1900s and during World War II, and the idea was formed way back then that the Jewish people need a homeland.
Well,
so obviously when people started seeing, hey, these people are, I'm giving you like a 1 minute summary. Yeah. You'd have to go into history and really look at all the issues and problems that they caused for a lot of these European countries.
As you just said, they were starting to look like a threat for the Europeans. So they decided...
They were extremists, kind of extremists in their beliefs.
Yeah. So they decided to just kick them out and take them and let them be in one specific land. And since the Muslim people are, according to those extremist Europeans, again, a sort of enemy, so they said they would live there together. And if even if they kill each other, it's not a problem. It's not our problem, at least.
Right. I mean, I think it's just crazy, right? I think these people could have gone anywhere in the world. Like, honestly, in the middle of America, they could have created, you know, Israel, right? But it's they're so extreme in their beliefs, right, is what's creating this whole problem. That they're so hardcore in their beliefs, it's hard for us to even imagine, I would say.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, they're moving out there and they're migrating to Israel or Jerusalem. I guess they have their own explanations. Like, they have got this religious importance behind that. There's a whole theory behind it.
Yeah, they say that land is our land.
That land is, yeah, exactly. But
as a heritage.
Yeah, as a heritage. But it's actually wrong, right?
Yeah, that's
wrong. You just
wrong.
Cannot claim as any land, any piece of land to be yours and just evacuate innocent people out of that.
Exactly, yeah. So,
let's say even if we say that, yes, that God gave them that land way back, you know, thousands of years ago after Prophet Moses, but does that mean, does that justify that you need to kill children and women, that you need to, you know, just go crazy in brutality? You know, is that
and
what God wants?
Then let's go for the answer after the break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, welcome back. We are talking about an important issue which has been so viral right now. At this moment that we're talking, many people are getting killed, and that's the topic of today's discussion. This is Back to Reality. I'm Asma. Brother Ali and Brother Mustafa are helping me with today's topic. So we came to this point that it's crazy to kill people just because suddenly you get awake and you feel like there is a land in a corner of this world and you have to get there and seize it. And since there are other people in there, and since you call those other people as the not chosen people, then you have to kill them all.
Unfortunately, they don't even call, like, they call us goyims. That's one of the words that they use. Or I think in English, they'll translate it sometimes as Gentiles. And in other places, we're considered as animals, right?
Oh, my God.
I mean, at this point, if we've all been watching the news, I think, and we've seen that even their leaders have come out and said this openly, that these people are animals, right? That's unfortunately part of their extreme beliefs. That's unfortunately part of their misinterpretation of I would say, Judaism and God's, you know, what God actually gave them. So that's one of the problems that we're dealing with, is that not only do they believe it's their promised land, they believe that once the greater Israel is formed, you know, that's when, like, God will give them the entire kingdom, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going towards that at 1,000%.
That's what happens, you know, the extreme beliefs that you are better than the rest of the humanity. This often leads you to hatred towards others who do not come under your category or your criteria. Like the rest of the people, be it Christians or Muslims or any other religion, well, not Jews. So this leads to hatred. When you have so much of self-love, when you guys admire yourself so much, so you deem the others to be worthless, and that leads you to doing any sort of
you actually
atrocities.
Get away from your humanity, and you start to be yourself an animal. The other fellow who's living there in the same sky, breathing the same air, is not as important as me because I'm different from those people and because I'm chosen one.
Right, exactly.
There exists such extremist point of view in other religions as well. Like, we could compare the Zionists, these extremist people, we could compare them with the ISIS. Like, the Muslim people are not like that.
Definitely. Extremism, we're not saying it's only limited to, for example, Zionism. You know, we find similar extremism, for example, unfortunately, within Islam, when we saw that in the form of Daesh and ISIS, right? Although I would say in brackets that ISIS wars formed by Zionists, but that's a separate story. But
that's an office rank of Zionism, of course.
Right, but they used, how did they do that? You know, they use Islamic knowledge or Islamic sources.
And their slogans.
They took the most extreme interpretation they could, and they ignored a lot of it, right?
What I would prefer over here is, instead of using the term religion, we can use like different groups. As it is believed to be that, Zionism is separate from Judaism. Like Judaism is a religion, and Zionism is a political ideology or something. Like
exactly.
It's a movement. Yeah. And for example, like Islam is a religion, and it has no similarities or no connections with Daesh or ISIS. It's a group. It's a terrorist group. It has nothing in relation with Islam.
Exactly.
So, like, these are two, like, extremist groups.
Yeah, so we should notice the very fact that religions, like, as if we consider ourselves as Muslims, we do respect Prophet Moses, and we do respect his book. We have been told to do so according to our own prophet. So there is a difference between these extremist sort of, let's say, school of thought, and then the religion itself. But then what happens to them to feel like they could get their land by killing other people and it's okay?
Well, unfortunately, their religion, well, not their religion, I would say their interpretation of their religion or Zionism, that's sanctioned it. It's allowed it, right? They're allowed to kill children and women. Of course, you'll find many Jews who are against Zionism and against these rabbis as well, the ones that are normal human beings, I would say, and they care about others, right? We're not saying that every single Jew is bad or anything like that. Of course, we're talking about the ones that are Zionists, that are extremists. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it's allowed. In a recent statement made by Netanyahu, he invoked the word, I believe it was Amalekites. It's a word that appears in their books. And it talks about being able to kill children and women. And not only that, they say burn everything, like their cattle, their trees. Whereas in the religion of Islam,
like destroy them completely.
Yeah, destroy them completely. Yeah, completely.
More of a political movement.
It is.
To brainwash those people who believe in religion.
In this situation, the things are like what we are watching every day, the news updates, the videos coming from Palestine. Everything is, as clear as day. You can decide who are being oppressed and who are the oppressors.
But many people still on the other sides of the world would believe that the Zionists are the ones who are being oppressed.
It all depends upon the news the media or the false
media. The propaganda.
Media. Yeah, the propagandist, the propaganda media. These are the various factors, right? If you get the right news, any human being, when he watches these videos, it's it's as clear as day to decide who are the oppressors and who are being oppressed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you know this. Do you know the slogan of Mossad? Do you know the slogan that they use?
What is
it? In Hebrew, if you translate it, it's by way of deception, make war. Okay, so they're openly saying they were going to deceive you and make war.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally telling you we're going to be lying to you, okay, in their slogan. It's kind of ironic, but a lot of us don't know this, right? And unfortunately, that's another extreme Zionist ideology, is that you can deceive people.
Yeah.
You can deceive them and destroy them.
So how bad it is, these are the roots of their beliefs.
We could still go, for hours, because there's too much of brutality, there's too much of oppression for the people who are living in peace in their own land, and then suddenly someone comes as a Caesar and then kills all of them and shed too much of blood in there under the slogan that, okay, this is our promised land. Where is humanity then? So I guess there's a lot of things to think about. This episode is just going to work as a trigger for you guys to go and search and find out the truth by yourself, I suppose. It's just a moment of thinking. I guess that could work like a trigger, and then you would go for it and search more and more. So thank you for staying with us until another episode. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
In the limelight.
In every corner of Gaza, a child, a woman, or an elder has been killed. There is no talk in Gaza now except about the victims of the Zionist regime's brutal aggression. Recently, in response to growing solidarity with Palestine, media giant Hearst censors its employees who publish posts in solidarity with Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote, media giant Hearst is instituting a new social media policy that bans its employees, including its journalists, from expressing personal political opinions online. Hearst magazine's media union said in statement, Hearst is declaring that our channels for personal expression are company property, even when we are off the clock. Political posts, such as personal views about political candidates or opinions about the Zionist regime's war on Gaza, must first be reviewed by a supervisor before being posted on staff's personal social media accounts. Staff who violate the rule are subject to discipline. The policy also encourages staff to report their co-workers for posts that they view as inflammatory. The policy, which was shared with the Washington Post, reads, "We should be careful to consider the impact that a controversial statement on a hot-button issue may have on Hearst's reputation." Palestine Legal, a U.S.-based advocacy group that defends people who support Palestinian rights, believe that the implementation of this policy is in direct response to growing solidarity with Palestine. The group said on social media, "This is McCarthyism." In mid-October, Samira Nasr, editor-in-chief of Hearst's own Harper's Bazaar, was forced to apologize after posting on Instagram a story where she called the Israeli siege of Gaza the most inhuman thing I've seen in my life. Recently, Hearst magazine's media union shared the new policy on social media, urging members to not sign the restrictive policy while legal review is underway. Also recently, the UNN filed an unfair labor practices complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, arguing that the policy should have been negotiated with the union first before going into effect. In recent weeks, Palestine Legal has been getting dozens of reports of firings, an exponential increase like nothing we've seen before. Palestine Legal Senior Staff Attorney Rahika Sainta recently told The Cut. Multiple journalists have been publicly fired and taken off air for sharing content with pro-Palestine sentiment on their personal social media accounts. In October, the editor of the magazine Art Forum, David Velasco, was fired after his magazine published an open letter in support of Palestine. Velasco's firing is